I am unashamed. What about you?
So yesterday I was driving back from my southern lair, which actually is the name of my house now. It started out as a joke for the podcast, but now Tony is painting me a sign, or Lisa, a sign that says Southern Lair, which is going to hang on my house down there, which is kind of funny. But I had to stop by on my way home at Billy's Bacon, Billy is the guy from Yazoo City, Mississippi, that makes some of the best smoked bacon in the world. So I had to stop by and buy my 10 pounds of bacon because I got all my people here, Chad, you know, our nurse practitioner, others who love the bacon. So I feel like I'm part of a bacon cartel now. Well, I pay people in bacon.
For instance, if you're just going to have green beans out of the can, not even fresh ones, but if you get fresh ones, it's better. But you get them out of the can, green beans, take them, drain the water off of them. What you do is before you put the green beans in a skillet to warm them up, just take some of that bacon, three or four slices of that bacon, cut it in pieces about like that.
Yep.
Put it over in there, stir it around a little bit, and about the time it's turning brown, put your beans in, your green beans, and then turn your fire down low, put a lid on this, let them steam there a little bit with that bacon. It really helps green beans.
Oh, it's amazing. You're right. Anything they go in, you know,
I got news for you. I do that with everything.
Well, I was just offering them a possibility and let them branch on out from there.
I need to give you a pound of this bacon.
Let me reveal.
Dad's got some.
From earlier episodes. A
couple of slices.
Yep. Let me reveal a conspiracy theory from earlier episodes. We had the great cheese caper that you told us about, and I found
The
cheese heist. Well, listen to this.
By the way, let me just say something about that. So we get over there, Dad, after the podcast, we go to his house, and he's saying the same thing to Dan and Mom that he did on the podcast. And Dad said, "Oh, the cheese is up in the refrigerator. I've already brought
it." This is weird.
Yeah.
What I'm fixed to do.
Wondering, I saw a whole back car loaded with two big boxes of cheese. They said this was a gift.
Wisconsin.
For you folks in Wisconsin with that cheese, you wouldn't have believed what happened. It was like ravaging wolves. They attacked that cheese.
Well,
I got home. I said, "Where's the cheese?"
Further developments. Uh-oh. So I come home yesterday. I open my refrigerator, and there's cheese everywhere. I think it had to be
part of this stash.
Somebody brought me some cheese, and I think it was your cheese.
I've been looking for that somebody ever since the cheese arrived, because it went everywhere but to me. Where's the cheese?
It's in the country kitchen.
They're in small blocks, and each one of them, like, it's Colby, Age Colby. Said bacon and cheddar.
Yep.
Is this from your supply? Yeah, and one of them had onion, chives.
Yes, that's where it came from.
Me that cheese?
Being a generous person, I am generous. I don't care what anybody says.
When it comes to cheese,
I thought, well, if it goes to all the family members, at least they'll enjoy it.
I think since it wound up in Anna's house, she's been doling it out and to Willie.
But this is more cheese than I could eat in 2 years.
Dad said it was 100 pounds. Did you say 100 pounds of cheese?
At least. So I just figured, I said, the people gave it to me, I said, well, maybe they thought, no, they gave it to we.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's made its way through the neighborhood, Dad.
I made me some fresh egg, you know, because we got eggs everywhere now. They've gone completely organic, in quotation marks. And so I got all these eggs. So I put every kind of cheese that they brought me on a different sliver of egg, and I tried them all. I mean, I would say it was at least 20 different types of cheese.
Wow.
But boy, when I saw that bacon, I thought, no, this is an idea.
Yeah, I've been seeing the bacon.
Let's put the bacon in some cheddar. Mm. Oh, it was awesome.
It was good, huh?
Yeah, it had kind of a smoky flavor to it.
It was probably smoked cheddar.
We had a big crawfish ball. And the ones that were left that we didn't get to eat, it was like an ice chest, 3/4 full of crawfish, right out of the Atchafalaya Basin, which is where this river goes. We're a little bit longer in the season.
Did this happen?
That was two or three days
ago. I never heard anything about it.
Me either.
So they had a big fest, a little crawfest. So we're eating them, but we had some left.
Were they big ones?
Oh.
Yeah, big size.
I mean, they were great, but John, our nephew there.
Oh, Gimber.
Well, next time
got a great cook on them. And so we took the what we had left, we peeled them, put them in a bowl, and we had our gratin with cheese, crawfish tails with cheese.
With the Wisconsin
and
cheese.
And a white sauce. Yeah. And we had the cheese in there with them, you know, in the sauce.
Oh,
but you talk about good.
Mm. Woo. Yeah, I appreciate you sharing.
Crawfish nestled down in that good cheese.
Cheesy white sauce. Oh.
I mean, I would have got in.
Wisconsinites, they're not the greatest duck callers in the world. They're working on it. But as far as cheese making, whoever said, make sure you get them recipes before we go from Europe over there to the States, to that wilderness, make sure you got them recipes, that cheese. So wherever they ended up there in Wisconsin, somebody broke out that recipe and said, okay, we brought the old ways to the new
ways. But age. So I guess somebody's going to have to let us know from Wisconsin, because I don't know if this new thing Jason was mentioning, because I've been noticing too, I've been buying cheese even at the store, about putting a lot of stuff in the cheese. Like, because in the old days, you just had basically, you know, yellow cheese or white cheese. You didn't have any choice.
I know.
But now they've got all these things they're putting in there with
You're talking about duck calling.
Thank God for Wisconsin cheese is all I got to say.
I'm teaching, you know, I have the two little dogs that you say aren't worth a whole lot. The little lap dogs, Hazel and Buddy.
By the way, I eat cheese, I would say, daily.
Yeah.
So somebody said, well, I tell you what, you know, you eat too much cheese. Yeah, that's going to happen. Look, 75 years old, no pain, no inflammation, no nothing. You say, well, maybe we ought to eat a little cheese every day. I'm just saying.
Well, at some point, you're going to have to balance with some bran. So I'm teaching my dog to blow a duck call or sound like a duck.
Your dog?
Yeah, this little dog. You know how we have our retrievers? Well, I have a dog that wants to participate in the calling. Because the first time I blew a duck call, this dog perked up, you know, the other one. So if I film this, can we share this,
Josh,
can we share this for our podcast? So I'll let y'all watch it, and then we'll play it as y'all watching it. And so then y'all can, so let me turn it like this. I think you can see it there. Let me see if this works.
Hey, all right. I'm teaching Butters how to blow a duck call. Thought you'd get a kick out of it. You ready, Butters? All right, Butters, you ready?
Did you notice the cadence
of the bark?
Yeah.
I didn't really pick that up. But yeah.
He lets me go. He lets me do my thing.
There's hope for that sucker.
And then he does a quack, and then he'll, I said that daughters and my wife last night.
It's the world's first duck calling dog. Is that dog? A Chihuahua? What is he?
You know what? You got me. It's little.
Yeah. And that's the one that belonged. This is the one that belonged to Missy's grandmother who passed away, right? So y'all inherited the.
And as a in jest, she left it to Missy, who doesn't do pets. When I was informed of that, I thought, yes, that is funny. But she's the dog was gonna live in Austin.
Yeah.
But the dog, Missy, called me one night and she's like, it's me or the dog. So when you, next time you come, take that dog with you because I can't handle it. So me and the dog had.
Can you tell, Jason?
Either get rid of the dog or have a divorce.
Dad, can you tell Jason spent a lot of time alone now at home? This is what he's come up with to amuse himself. He's teaching his dog how to.
Yeah.
I thought, to my knowledge, I don't know of another duck call emulating dog. And It does. He does the same thing every time. He lets me get started. He jumps up on the top side. You notice the other dog, Hazel, she's like, no, I'm too old and fat for that. She doesn't do anything. She just sits.
We had one down there, Jason. Remember if we put the Arkansas high ball on him, very high pitched, and you kept it long enough, we had one.
Yeah, he started howling.
He was howling.
Because it was hitting his hearing level.
He was howling at the moon.
Well, these two dogs do that too. We'll go through the howl, but that's more just
I have seen people that do a pretty good with their voice. One year we were doing a Duck Commander Day. We used to do those at the church. It was always a big outreach day. Everybody'd wear camo. Everybody got excited about it. And usually one of us or all of us would speak. And I remember one year we were doing it, and that's back when I was preaching regular. And somebody said, you know, there's a girl here that, I mean, she sounds just like a mallard duck with her mouth. And so I was like, huh. So I get up there and I'm like, welcome everybody. I said, hey, somebody told me there's a girl here. Well, she pops up. She's back in the back of the auditorium. I said, cut out on her. Let's hear what you got. And she's like, bah, bah, bah. I mean, like with her mouth, she sounded like she was really good. And I was like, man, you can do anything.
I've seen several individuals, one from Florida called me up one day and said, hey, listen to this. I don't need a duck call. I said, really? He said, yeah, I didn't sound like a duck with my voice. I said, crank down on it. So he did it over the phone and came to see me later on. And I said, man, you've got quite the skill set. He could sound just like one. And there are some individuals out there.
If everybody could do that, we'd have never had a business.
Well, you remember the guy who sounded perfectly like a duck with his mouth?
Yeah.
You remember the guy?
Yeah.
I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah.
He started off doing Donald Duck impersonation, but it led to he trained his voice. He doesn't need a duck. He's bad for business.
Yeah, raspy.
He may just, get back in touch with us after this little episode, but I mean,
he may.
The boy could sound like a duck.
He actually sent me a message during duck season
because
he somehow got my number, and he was like, you remember me? Of course. But he's like, I'm the guy who sounds like a duck without a duck call. And I was like, oh, I remember you.
Was it Johnny Wink that could do the goose?
He does the geese.
And it is so funny because the way he does his mouth, his teeth, like it's almost frightening to watch it.
It is frightening. I mean, Phil characterized him the best I've ever heard as saying he's a bit high strung. I mean, that guy,
Johnny Wink,
a lot of us hunt and a lot of us enjoy it. We have passion, but he's
another level.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I've gone with him a couple times.
But he's a true duck hunter.
Oh, he is hardcore and goose hunter.
And can sound like a goose, but it's so funny.
I just laugh.
Whatever you're gaining by his call, your buddies are laughing so hard because he just gets a crazed look in his eyes, and it's so loud.
He's into it.
And the way he does his mouth, it's just like you don't think it's humanly possible for your jaw to get in that position, and yet he does it.
Yeah.
Let's take a break, and then I know Dad's got something for us. So one of our sponsors that we've had for a pretty good while that's one of my favorites is Omega XL. And the reason why is because these guys have come up with an amazing product that basically deals with inflammation and pain. And, I mean, I've been taking it now for almost a year, I guess. And it's amazing. I don't take ibuprofen anymore. And I was taking it daily just for aches and back hurt and all that kind of thing. So it's really knocked it out for me. Dad takes it as well. It's the only thing you take, really.
I have zero, nilch, none. What do you call it?
Aches, inflammation.
Inflammation. No aches.
Right, which is really good. So it comes from mussels that they grow in New Zealand, which is pretty amazing. They got over 35 years of science that goes into it. So you want to check these guys out if you got some aches and pains. Here's how you get started. You go to OmegaXL.com. You buy one bottle, you get the second bottle free. So it gives you a couple of months supply. That's OmegaXL.com/Phil. Or you can call them 800-844-4888. That's 800-844-4888.
Got something for Jace. We've heard him expound on this repeatedly. So I thought, I wonder if the scriptures have anything to say about guys who go around looking for treasure.
Hunters. I like this. I've probably read most of these.
My son, which you are, This is under the heading of the moral benefits of wisdom. Here's wisdom, Jace. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Look for the moral wisdom as if you were looking for buried treasure. So when Jace does his treasure, looking for treasure, it's pretty good to make that next step forward and say, you know what? I wonder why he would say moral wisdom is, look, it's hard to find. It's what he's saying. So you need to put this in your heart.
And we talked
the whole podcast.
The whole podcast, and like 4 minutes left, yeah. Phil said, I found it.
Yeah.
Well,
you and I have been talking the whole time. Dad never said a word because he was trying to find that part.
I went this past weekend and asked, and no, Phil, you're going to love this story while you're looking.
Okay.
So the farmer who owns the land where we have our bed and breakfast and at Logtown, you know, and he said, you can hunt anything I have. And so I looked at old maps, you know, and tried to find places. Well, I went to his office the other day. I took him some slow jelly. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, you know, there used to be this big cotton gin right across here. And I was like, really? I was like, well, do you care if I hunt that? Because he had a picture of it. I said, that looks old. He said, I don't care, but I don't own it. And so I was like, oh, well, who owned it? So he told me the guy who did. So I went and saw the guy and knocked on his door, which is always awkward because a lot of people, they're not even familiar with metal detecting or treasure hunting. And so I asked him if I could hunt. He said, you can hunt anywhere you want to out here. And so I did. I actually found a silver dime. And when I found it, he was pulling back in his driveway. Well, here's the part that you'll like. So I go over there. I'm all excited. Of course, he's looking at me like, this is exciting. I was like, this was in your yard. It was like a 1945 silver dime. And he said, well, you know why I'm letting you hunt here? And so I kind of like paused. I said, why? He said, well, I was traveling on the river. And he said, my gas detector, what's the word I'm
gauge.
Looking for? Yeah,
gauge.
My gas gauge.
Gas detector.
We were talking about metal detector.
I've never heard that one before.
Wow, couldn't think. He said it was broken. And he said, I ran out of gas. And he said, I paddled. I went to the bank. Looked like a house up there. He said, I walked up there. You know, dogs were barking, knocked on the door. He said, and it was your dad. So that's where you run out of gas. I was like, oh, I hope this has a happy ending. I hope this has a happy ending.
Because everything's riding on whatever happens next, right?
And he said, come on in. He said, you know, he just started talking about Jesus and various things. And he said, you know, I kept thinking, I just need some gas. I ran out. He said, so he took me outside, and he said, well, it's funny. He would walk to a different can and pick it up. And he's like, nope. He picked it. Nope.
Nope.
He said, so finally he got one and said, yep. He said, so he gave me the gas, and he said, well, you know, I'll pay for it. He's like, no, I'm not. He said, you take it. He said, your dad said, I may be up your way, you know, one time and need something. He said, I just never forgot that. And he said, then here you come. He's like, I knew you were his son.
Small world.
Yeah. So
to your point, Dad, that's an act of kindness to someone. And then years later, he has the opportunity to pay it forward to your son just by happenstance. I mean, you talk about moral wisdom. And
yeah, I mean, we're talking 30 years.
Isn't that something?
I mean, I just thought now he's up the river.
Yeah.
I would say not very far from you. And you know, I asked him.
But a long way when you're paddling.
Trust me, if you had said no, because I know we didn't have any money back then. Guess what? When I knocked on that door, he's like, no, I'm out of gas. Exactly.
Oh, I was going to get some gas in his rig.
Yeah.
But that's
good job, Phil.
Good job, Phil.
That's one of many, many, many that have, for whatever reason, broke down, tore up, got lost, sunk a boat. We're here. But it goes on. But here, the Lord is exalted.
Where's it at?
Isaiah 33.
Oh, five. He's only off two chapters.
All right.
The Lord is exalted, for he dwells on high. He will fill Zion with justice and righteousness. He will be the sure foundation for your times, a rich store of salvation and wisdom and knowledge.
I like it.
The fear of the Lord is the key to this treasure. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's like treasure when you find out about how to operate when you're under distress and help. And it comes your way. Blessings come your way, you say, because of the fear of the Lord. He said it's treasure.
So what made something you look for on these treasure verses? Where you
I heard you expounded on hunting for treasure, and I just thought,
he just wondered if it was biblical.
I thought, I wonder what the Bible says about that.
It says a lot about it. I mean,
what it says is, keep looking for the treasure. So Dad, there.
You just brought up an interesting point, which really makes your point, is that people always say, well, I don't really know how to study the Bible, but you just heard that's a good practical way. I mean, you hear something,
that's
you think,
you
I wonder
the
what
Bible.
The Bible says about this.
That's right.
I mean, that's a great way to approach it and then get into a study.
I got into it, I did it for the first couple times. Then I did what you did. I went through the verses and I thought, man, there is a lot of spiritual application, which way greater than us finding buried history.
That's right.
But where the treasure part came up, well, you know, back when silver was being minted into coins, it wasn't, nobody knew that it was going, the value was going to keep going. I mean, now like that silver dime I found, it's worth 100 times what it was worth.
Look for
which is not much, right, but still it's way more valuable.
Look, if you look for it as for silver, he's talking about moral benefits of wising up while you're on the earth. He said, there's treasure right there in front of you, but you've got to look for it to find it. You're not going to be walking along one day, you know, doing your own thing and forget God and everything about him. He said, you look and you search, you'll find it. It's like finding treasure. That's why in the New Testament, I would just give you a couple of texts in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
But that's like two of many.
Yeah, we've talked about a lot of
ones. Jesus himself said, you know, it was like treasure buried in a field. When the guy finally found it, he sold everything he had. He said, boy, I done run up on something here. Well,
so essentially, I didn't know we were going to be talking about this, but so this past weekend, we were down at the Southern Lair. John and Paula Godwin came down, spent the weekend with us. It was their anniversary. So we went over to eat with our friend, Jace, our mutual friend, Chris.
Yeah, I've hunted with him.
Chris and Jenny
Sherrill.
When did
we convert them to? That's been a long
time. Been a pretty good while. Oh, John and Paula?
Yeah.
Oh, that's like 25 years ago.
Yeah.
That's way back. So anyway, we're over there eating dinner where they're showing John and Paula all their stashes, you know, because they're big-time hunters too.
Mm-hmm.
And they found some really cool stuff. He had just found a buckle that went on a Union sash.
He sent me a picture of
it. Yeah, it was really cool. So anyway, so we're looking at all their stuff. And so at the end of them kind of showing John and Paula, because Lisa and I have had a lot of meals with Chris is a chef and a lot of good meals at his house. But at the end, his wife, Jenny, last year, they had some struggles in their marriage. And, you know, Lisa and I kind of worked them through the process. And out of that struggle, Jenny started treasure hunting with Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Something they could do together.
Good, clean fun.
Yeah, and she's really good at it. So she gave Lisa a cross, and in the cross she had glued in all these porcelain pieces, some of them 150, 200 years old, because they said you find a lot of broken pieces of pottery.
All the time.
And so they had these just jars full of it, but she took some of the most colorful ones and she put it on a cross. Of course, everybody was in tears because she gave it to Lisa, and she said, you know, when we were a broken mess, you and Al were willing to help us. And we just want this as a thank you for how good our life is now, because they had found this common cause.
That's cool.
Treasure hunting. So it was really, so it's hanging in our house now, which is really, I mean, it was just.
Which kind of proves the scripture's point.
Exactly. That's how you find
God
it.
What God is telling us. I've always been you'll find.
A big fan.
Hang on, Jess. Let's take a break. So we talk a lot about sleep on this podcast because we have some really great sponsors of mattresses and pillows and all sorts of things. One of my favorites is a company called Boll & Branch. They make signature sheets, and they are super comfortable. You're sleeping on some now, Dad, because I got you some.
But if you think about it, you spend a third of your life sleeping.
That's right. So you need to have, you want to be comfortable there, right?
More like a quarter, but still. Yeah.
And your wife is on record as saying that's her most important time.
She makes up for my percentage. She's half, I'm a quarter. So together we're a third.
So these sheets, super high standard, organic cotton, really, really good. They're deep, so they fit over a king size bed, which is what we sleep on. So if you want to check these guys out, you're going to enjoy it. I can guarantee you. It's bollandbranch.com is where you go. You get 15% off your first order of sheets when you use the promo code Robertson at checkout. So it's 15% off Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L and branch.com, promo code Robertson. Enjoy your sleep.
I've always been a big fan of good, clean fun. I mean, when I was in high school, and I wasn't going to the party scene. I mean, I was all in for Jesus. You know, there's the problem is you got to find something to do. So, I mean, I would go to sports and hunting. And but even I think as when you get older, finding things that are good and fun. Of course, there's some people in the world, they don't like people. They just want to leave everything buried because they're like somehow or another, if you dig this up, you're bringing up the past.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a something. It's a material that means nothing compared to Jesus. It's nothing. And it's good, clean fun. You're cleaning up the, you know, the metal in the dirt.
Think about it, Jace. Once you run up on, I had no idea, but at about 28, that's getting on toward 30. I'm like, I find this treasure of the gospel. And the Apostle Paul alluded to what Isaiah said in the Proverbs, he's saying, we've got this treasure in jars of clay.
That's right.
With our bodies. And you're like, we came from the dust, but you find this treasure and you carry that around with you. Boy,
and every jar of clay is flawed. You know, it's not perfect.
Well, it says to show that the power comes from him and not us, which is what, if you think about it, God is the ultimate detector because he's, finds us.
We're the treasure.
Cleans us up. Yeah, he views us as treasure, which is an awesome thought.
But I do like the idea of searching because, Dad, you mentioned at 28, you're now about to be 70.
75. I'll be 75 this month.
This month. So, and you've never stopped searching.
Nope.
You still search.
Still search.
I mean, you know, which is
you know
awesome.
What's amazing? What I didn't know at 28 that the treasure was even there. Once I found it, you say, so fast forward about 50 years later, you say, oh, I've found treasure after treasure, more and more treasure as I go on. It just keeps coming.
Yeah.
I just keep. But it comes from the word. It comes from the word. All scripture is God-breathed.
Yeah.
It's useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, training. You take these scriptures and you say, you'd be amazed what they'll do if you just obey them. It's amazing.
Back. Oh, I had an interesting conversation.
Peace of mind will come your way.
By constant use, you train yourself.
So this guy was saying, he said, you know, I've read the book of John since you recommended that. And, you know, that was really good. He said, my goal was to read it three times in a year. And I said, I read it every week. And he said, well, how long have you been doing that? I said, about 30 years. I said, so... think bigger. I hated to tear down the playhouse, but I was thinking three times in a year, you're going to need to get into it more than that. It'll take you 15 minutes to read it.
Yeah,
maybe 20. But I thought it was comical. I was thinking, that's great, but the bar is way too low.
But you've come up on a serious point because you read through the book of Acts. What was the message? What were they told to do because of the message if they believed it?
Right.
Over and over and over. Why be so redundant over and over and over? so you couldn't miss it.
Right.
If you're looking.
Well, yeah, and well, you find you new stuff, but you find new, because it's a person. It's like, I mean, I've been married to my wife 30 years, but I stumble up on something I didn't know very often. I mean, it's just, you get to know somebody and things change, but when it's done, when God is revealing himself in a person, just the little things in his attitude and the way he handled different situations, there's just always something new that comes out of it.
And I like the idea of the unexpected. In Acts 16, which is where we are, Paul winds up in Philippi, which is interesting because when you read the book of Philippians, which is only four chapters long, it's one of the best little books in the Bible to me. It's full of joy. And you can tell when you read Philippians, Paul had a real close affinity with the church there. And what was interesting about it was if you get over to verse 12 in Acts 16, they traveled to Philippi, a Roman colony in the leading city in the district of Macedonia. And earlier he had had a vision to go to Macedonia. He wasn't going to go there, but the Holy Spirit prompted him to go there. And it said they stayed there several days. And in verse 13, it says, on the Sabbath, we went outside the city gate to the river where we expected to find a place of prayer. So I thought it was interesting. He had gone to the Sabbath first. It doesn't say it, but it kind of sounds like they kind of struck out. Like, so now they're just going to go down by the river basically to have some alone time and pray. But they run up on this woman there, one of those listening. It says, we sat down and began
to
speak.
She wasn't with them. She would just listen. That we call it secondhand conversion.
Probably
people
down there doing the wash. Who knows? So, but we sat down and began to speak to the women who had gathered there. So they were probably gathered to wash clothes is what I figure. One of those listening was a woman named Lydia, a dealer in purple cloth from the city. So she's a businesswoman who was a worshiper of God. The Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. When she and the members of her household were baptized, she invited us to her home. If you consider me a believer in the Lord, she said, come and stay at my house. And they persuaded us. So I thought it was interesting because it's a great little picture of what you described that about treasure. I think, you know, Paul was set out kind of with a mindset. He goes to the Sabbath like he normally does.
You never know who's listening.
You don't know. And that's why, I mean, she becomes the bedrock of this church that starts in the city that later on, listen to the way he starts the book of Philippians. He says, I thank my God, chapter 1, verse 3, every time I remember you. This is to the church there years later. And all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. Yep. So, I mean, he had an affinity, but it all started on a riverbank with some women gathered up. And I don't think that wasn't the plan.
No.
But Paul sees the opportunity of the moment, you know, and it's like this small world.
Jace tells that story about trying to convert about three or four or five of his old buddies, you know.
Oh, yeah. And the guy
one of them listened for about 30 seconds and left the premises, but he's back in his back room. Look, and he's got his head against the door.
That's so
and so Jace is talking to this one group. None of them said, I'm ready. I don't know about this right here. Then a voice crying out in the wilderness said, I am. And Jace looks around there. Well, the guy who left the premises had the door cracked back. He's listening. What was that old guy's name?
McIntosh.
Yeah,
he listens to the podcast. So
I talk to him all the time.
Yeah, Kevin, I know you appreciate us telling your story.
Good listening there, McIntosh.
The voice.
Yeah, which then they wind up in prison. What always stands out to me in this is that the last thing you would think they'd be doing at midnight in verse 25 would be praying and singing hymns to God, and the other prisoners were listening to them.
So that in which by the way, let's take another break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
So they started out, this riot breaks out, and but what happens before they
another example that the Apostle Paul, God through the Apostle Paul, wants you to understand, there's always somebody else listening that you don't realize are listening.
Exactly right.
You know,
where they're walking along and this woman is screeching to the top of her lungs. She's possessed, but these people are making money off of her. And so Paul turns around just because he's sick of listening to her. That's what it sounds like to me.
Think about this, Al. You and Jace are my sons. Y'all, there was an era in there when y'all were younger books, young boys, and you would walk in the morning and there'd be two or three people sleeping at the house, scattered around on the couches and all that. Y'all would look, plus you, how many times did y'all sit there and you were hearing me talk to them about Jesus? Mm-hmm. And it was being ingrained in you, but I wasn't thinking about y'all. You know, you're my own boys. I didn't know where y'all were back in the back room, but I noticed y'all cleared out when the
Bible study started.
When the Bible study started, y'all moved away, but y'all heard that your entire life.
Right.
Well, say what you will, Al. Fast forward 50 years, well, there y'all sit.
Yeah.
So
still doing the same thing.
Yeah, it was a good example.
It was.
No doubt.
And so anyway, this woman is screeching, and so Paul says, in the name of Jesus, and he cast the demon out of her. Well, the problem was the people there in this city in Philippi, they're making money off of whatever she was doing.
Yeah.
And so it turned everything into an uproar. But I want to mention this, Jay, before we got to the prison. They flogged Paul and Silas, which, you know, we think about a beating. But in these days, when the Romans put a flogging on you.
Well, they stripped. I mean, which is, one, humiliating. Two, I had enough belt weapons in my life. Hint, hint. That, I mean, at least I had, and I was trying to get on as many clothes as possible.
You put in some padding.
Well, just prior to that, they shut down the fortune teller. You know, finally, right. The Apostle Paul turned around there.
But he got sick.
He was saying, she was saying things. I thought
she was saying, this is the man of God. Because so the demon in her was right. Paul got sick of listening to her. But here's why I want to make the point, because it's going to frame the rest of the book of Acts, is that Paul is a Roman citizen. They don't know that. Well, the Romans had a lot of similar rules Americans had. There's certain things you can't do to violate a Roman citizen's rights. And one of them is to beat him without a trial. Well, they didn't know. They just thought
that. By the way, we still teach Roman law.
That's right.
A lot of it came from the Romans.
It's very similar to our founders.
Well, they're not beating. You can't do that.
Right. Well, you couldn't.
You tell me about it. But you reckon that's happening in certain
places?
Well,
you're not supposed to be able to do it.
No.
But he was supposed to have got. So the rest of the book of Acts, especially in the later part when he's heading to Rome, is all about this instance where he was illegally beaten as a Roman citizen. Mm. So I just thought it was interesting that that's what starts now this emotion going forward, you know, was that story.
But his response is incredible. And it makes you realize, you know, there's another thing that come up in the next chapter, in chapter 18, and they're charging him once again. But the claim I thought was interesting in 18:13, it says, this man they charged is persuading the people to worship God in ways contrary to the law. And even when you read that about Lydia, said she was a worshiper of God, you know, worship is a constant theme in the book of Acts.
Yep.
And you know, we talk about the gospel, even in Acts 17, a chapter that we all know like the back of our hand, that whole sermon started when he said, I was looking at your objects of worship.
You're very religious.
You're very religious.
He's like, and what you worship as something unknown, I'm going to explain to you.
Make it now.
And I just think it's interesting then as much problems to be petty. I have to do this, but as many disagreements as we have as a religion about how we worship and with using, you know, what manner and style, and some people don't like this and I don't like that. And a lot of people, they will go to a church building based on how they're worshiping, whether they use instruments or whether they're conservative or whether, and you're looking, what you find here has nothing to do with that.
No.
The man just got wronged. beaten, stripped, and they're praying and singing in the prison. I'm like, it's not nowhere near. Is this some kind of corporate worship? Mm-hmm. It's not 9 o'clock in the morning and we're all, I mean, this is so far away from anything happening in a church setting. And what do we have going on? True worship, authentic worship, which I am a big proponent of. I just think you worship.
Even when you're in jail.
You worship every day. It's not how, it's who.
And they're locked down in the center of this, whatever the structure was like, because they got them double locked in the middle, and they're singing. And you think about all the other people around them. There were other criminals in there.
By the way.
Well, and
people that deserve to be there.
Yeah, the prisoners were listening, and the guards.
Right.
Yeah, by the way, really, 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 how much has changed as far as the message goes and the persecution? How much has really changed from that culture to this one?
Right.
What about it, Al? Are most people taking this? Oh, those are the greatest guys around. They're down there hollering about Jesus. How many of them say, I tell you what, yeah, they ought to.
But I like the idea that they were impacting people around them. Jason reminds me of that. Remember in the movie Shawshank Redemption? When Andy locks himself in the warden's office and he starts playing a record with an Italian opera singer. And so they're beating on the door and they're like, we're going to beat you. And he's looking at him and he just keeps playing the thing and he pipes it out to the whole prison. And all these old hardened criminals are all standing there looking up at these speakers, hearing these Italian opera scenes. And then Morgan Freeman's doing the voiceover and he says, that we don't know what they were saying, but that day we soared.
Yeah.
Because it was the idea of that. And when I see that scene, I think about this scene and them singing in that
prison. I thought the exact same thing. Because when you look at things from a spiritual perspective, that's what you do, and that's what worship is. I mean, the first time I walked into the church where we meet at now, because we came from a church of 25 people, and look, we worship and sang because we believe in Jesus, but it sounded terrible. I mean, it was all... and the songs were hundreds of years old. And when I walked in there, I thought, oh my, I didn't know what they were saying, but I felt the same way. I thought, I know who they're singing to, and I am fixed to get some chill bumps at this place.
Let's take one last break.
So with the coronavirus that came through, would you say that there's been undue restrictions placed on the people of God across the country? What do you think?
It was attempted.
We just, and the Christians just won a big Supreme Court decision because they tried to say no small groups because they already shut down the places of worship, quote unquote. And so people were meeting in their homes. Well, the leadership out there tried to shut that down, but the Supreme Court said, no, you cannot do that. You can't tell people they can't gather in their home and worship God. Which, thank goodness for the Supreme Court, but it just shows you what we've been up against, which, they still won't let them sing or chant or whatever, that's still on the
book.
That's
why I'm saying it hasn't gone anywhere.
No, you're right. You're right. The big picture.
I think it's a small thing. They know people are going to do it. I mean, but it's a small way for them to protest faith.
Yeah. I would say it's bigger than small.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, I'm not asking permission to go meet with people and worship God.
Right.
I'm just not going to do it.
So what happens in our story is that they're singing, people are listening, the guards are listening, everybody's tuned in, and all of a sudden, the Almighty just makes an earthquake happen. And so it's an odd earthquake because all it did was open everything up, where they could come out. So the jailer, back in these days, if you were in charge of a jail and there was a big escape, they killed you.
Yeah.
And all the guards. I mean, you're talking about having your life on the line for your job.
It's kind of a godfather
tone. I mean, the Romans didn't really let people. So this Philippian jailer, he's like, oh, he's getting ready to kill himself because he's like, it's over. He looks and sees the jail. It wasn't his fault, but it was an earthquake. And then Paul's, oh, we're all still here.
Don't harm yourself.
Don't harm yourself. We're good. Nobody's left anywhere. Which is amazing because all the chains had fallen off. The doors are all open, but nobody makes a move. And then because that guy is so impressed with this this guy, this prisoner, who apparently, you know, is not trying to escape.
Yeah, what about me?
That's right.
What I need to do to be saved.
Then he says, "What I want what you have."
Yep.
And so I find it interesting that first it says they washed him up, and then they were all baptized.
Yeah, it says they tended to their wounds.
Right.
Yeah, can you imagine if the authorities had walked in, and there somebody has the jailer, the Apostle Paul has the jailer by the neck, and he's baptizing him. What would he say? What are you doing?
How is this even possible?
You're the jailer, and they've got you, and that's they right. pushing you under some water. What are you doing?
Yeah,
they would have had no idea what he was doing.
That's exactly right. But you know, I think it's that classic case of sometimes people in settings like that can really find something. Godwin and I spoke for a jailer event out in Utah last year, and I toured their jail. You know, this is where the main guy is, and there's a lot of guards there. But we heard the testimony of a couple of young women. Both of them had been involved. They didn't kill a person, but they were involved in a murder. They were gang members. And so they were around late 20s, and this had happened when they were like 17 or 18 years old. So they've been in prison over a dozen years. And they sort of gave us their testimony. And one of them was the first time she had ever done it, so she was really emotional. But it was really interesting to them talking about how that they grew up in prison. I mean, they came in as teenagers. They were blocked off from the life they live, which was good. But at the same time, they didn't know what to do, how to act, kind of what you were talking about just on the last podcast. And their lives had changed. But they kept crediting the guards about giving them discipline. And at first they said, "We fought these people the whole way. We were the worst inmates." And the guards are kind of nodding like, "Yeah, they were pretty bad." She said, and then one of them said, "The one day I realized that, you know what, we're all in here together. They're in here just like we are."
Yeah.
And she said, and I quit fighting them after that. Well, then she wound up coming to faith, and she talked about that. And so they were both really nervous because they were both about to be released within a year, you know, from their sentence. They had long sentences, but because they've, you know, done well. So they were super nervous about going back into that old lifestyle. But it just struck me that we were in this, locked up in this facility. And I thought, man, these people have to live together in this setting. But because of Christ, lives are changed. You know,
my line is, you folks out here, you can be under lock and key like you are, but you can still be free.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Well, what I was going to say is, and we've known people who've been in prisons, and most of them, the ones that come to Jesus when they get out, they're glad they were in prison so they could find Jesus. I mean, it's all about attitude. But what, you know, I'm picking on religious people today because, number one, they were having worship at midnight in jail. But then, you know, after the earthquake happens, they washed their wounds, and it says at that hour of the night in 33.
It was late.
We're talking 2 or 3 in the morning.
Late.
At that hour of the night, they washed their wounds. And then immediately he and all his family are baptized. I do not like I do not approve of this idea of let's wait a month and have a baptism service. I'm like, who came up with that?
Right.
I mean, the people here.
Well, they didn't come up from it through the book of Acts. That's for sure.
No, you know, even Lydia in the previous story, the same, you get the feel. We just get this church building mentality where it's like everything happens in an organized way.
Around
3 months from now, we'll baptize y'all. You're like, I'm like, months.
What?
I'm ready.
I mean, look, we know Jesus saves, and you know, you have an opportunity to reenact Jesus. But I'm like, short of washing the wound, the blood pouring out of the body, there was no delay. Let me stop this. We don't want you to bleed to death. And then we're taking you down there. But, you know, I like the fact
that. And this was a dangerous thing for this jailer to do.
Absolutely.
To turn himself over to the Apostle Paul and confess Jesus as Lord.
Who was
at 3 o'clock in the morning after they had a big earthquake and all the prisoners they thought.
But you know what I think people miss, Phil, is how much joy and how fired up have you been in having a middle of the night or early morning, and I mean 1 to 2, 3 in the morning, baptism.
Yeah, I've had
it. It's exciting. And look,
Well, by the way,
to be down here at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning after all night study, then baptize people, and then somebody leads a song. I mean, you don't care what time it is.
And the text says, and the whole family, after they were baptized, were filled with joy because they had come to believe in God. Well, that says it all right there. And you're going to wait 3 months before the real joy is there? You're like, do it now. Don't mess with that.
I mean, to me, look, if you went back to Acts 2 and they're like, what do we do? You know, and he's like, repent and be baptized, every one of you. You know, no. We'll baptize you a month from now. What?
We're glad you made the decision.
No, it says those who heard the message responded. They didn't say, that is the dumbest tradition that somebody came up with.
We're laughing about it, but I just have reeled back in my mind discussing this, Jace. You brought it up. But I've just reeled back on how many late hours, or call it early hours, after 12 o'clock in the middle of the night, put it that way, I've walked down there from my house going toward the river.
Mm-hmm.
I've walked out in severe thunderstorms, lightning, I mean, backwater in the yard. I mean, looking at cottonmouths on the way down there.
Yeah.
And they said, what kind of snake is that? I said, step around over this way. Don't get that. And look, I've just cleared out brush out in the water.
Oh, Phil, look, I spoke one time, I think it was in Tallulah. It was a small little church. One of the guys that meet at our church he was the preacher there, and he asked me if I would like fill in. I was like, I don't mind. So I go over there. Well, there was a guy who responded at the invitation. So there wasn't 25, 30 people. And one of them responded. I could tell everybody was looking around like, ooh, what do we do?
What do we do
there
now?
There hadn't been a response there in years. They're like, I think he's coming.
Yeah.
So he said, you know, I hadn't been to church in 15 years and had been in trouble with the law. Yeah. It's weird how that story came up. He said, you know, I heard what you shared about Jesus, and I was wondering if you'd baptize me. I said, yeah. I said, but I tell you this, I doubt there's any water in the baptistry here. I look back, they didn't have a baptistry. He said, well, good, because I want to go to the Mississippi River. And because we wasn't far, you know. And he said, because trust me, he said, when I'm baptized, we need to get what I've done way away. He said, let's go with the biggest river we got, which I thought was funny.
We need strong current taking all that sin to the Gulf.
So we drive to the levee, Mississippi River, and the water was way up. And I felt like, we may die here, because it was just the current was roaring. And I thought, you know what? We've gone this far.
That's right.
And so we walked down, and about that time, you know, we baptized me. We come up when a truck pulled up, and it was just happenstance or a God orchestrated meeting. His buddies, the guys he knew, were from that area, and they're like, what are y'all doing? And he's like, well, I'm glad you asked. And I just launched it from there. I was like, yep, we just buried this old man because of what Jesus
has done for this man. So then his buddies heard it too.
Well, then they just took off. But maybe I felt some persecution.
Maybe rapid rate of speed.
Maybe they came around later.
But he looked at me and he said, we drew the line in the sand.
I was baptizing a girl down there in the river at night, and some fishermen were out there, and they pulled up there. You know, what in the hell going on? They hollered cursing.
Yeah.
You know what? I said, we're baptizing this girl. Y'all won't in on some of this action? And Lord, boom. I mean, they gunned that thing and said, could not get out of here.
Some crazy cult.
True story.
So anyway, they go to Lydia's house after they leave. And I think we'll leave with this, that the foundation of the Philippian church was a woman they met by the river.
Yep.
And a guy and his family that were jailers. So that's
pretty cool.
Pretty cool story.
That's worship, Jace.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.